T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Time now for the WEEI Producers Show on WEEI. WEEI.
And streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
That's right. This is the WEI Producer Show. Ryan Garvin, Chris Scheim, I'm Tyler Devitt, the Producer Show, produced as always by Nickel Pan. Thank you guys for joining us. We appreciate you wherever you are in the
good
city
morning.
Of Boston.
Good
we're all throughout New England. This hour of the Producer Show is brought to you by the cleanup and restoration specialists, our friends at ServPro. Call 1-800-SERVPRO. Celtics Heat 1-1 series split so far. Not a great first game, a disappointing second half, of course. You go into game two, wanting to get revenge, and now you come back to Boston with a split. That's all you can ask for if you're the Boston Celtics. It seems like the split is not what people were expecting in terms of the way it actually played out, because the game two was not even competitive. Game two wasn't even close.
It was close for the
6 minutes?
First 6 minutes.
Yeah, because the Heat were up at one point by what, like 11?
They were up 11 points.
And then the Celtics came storming back, and they literally never turned around.
Was it more good Celtics play, or was it bad Miami Heat play? I'm more inclined to believe it was bad Miami Heat play, and I'll get into it soon with some audio from actual NBA players who are blaming low IQ plays by the Miami Heat, but I'm actually inclined to believe it's more bad Miami Heat, especially in game two, than it was great Celtics play.
Well, I also think you're seeing the difference. I think you're seeing the difference in the two benches, right? And the guys outside of the natural starting five, or at least out of your superstars, right? Jimmy Butler's playing great. In both games, he played well. But the issue is in game two, he got zero help. Bam Adebayo somehow had 9 rebounds, was basically invisible in that game. And then Max Strus stinks. Tyler Hero can't hit a 3 all of a sudden. And Gabe Vincent is his only help, and Gabe Vincent is only so good. And
Victor Oladipo is a 0.
Yeah, like there's nothing around him. And so I understand why it's a lot of bad Miami play, but the superstar is playing well. So ultimately, it's if you aren't getting enough from the other guys, it's kind of the way you built it. It's kind of the GM's fault for not building it better. Like, I understand Kyle Lowry's hurt, but at the same time, the Celtics' secondary players are just better.
Yeah, I'm very interested to hear your thought on this, Tyler, because I definitely think this is more about what the Celtics have been doing, really, in the entire postseason, the last couple months of their season, compared to what the Heat aren't doing. I mean, I agree with you, Scheim. The Celtics look so much better.
So much better.
And I thought the Milwaukee Bucks had a lousy second unit. My goodness gracious. This Heat team just cannot get any help. You know, I understand why they were good in the regular season. They look like a team. They're tough. They're scrappy. Dirt dogs. Whatever.
Heat culture.
Oh, my God. Whatever you want to say about them. Yeah, I understand. Two things. I understand why they were the number one seed in the regular season, because they always try hard and they were good enough to always be in a game. But I also understand now why they were so, you know, quote unquote, disrespected, why they were overlooked, why people were going, no, worry about Philadelphia. No, worry about Milwaukee. Because it's just when you match up the talent of all those teams, including your Boston Celtics, by the way, they just do not stack up. And yeah, I think this has way more to do with the Celtics. You saw, you know, you want to say game one wasn't good. One quarter. One historically bad quarter is the difference in this series. It's the difference between your Boston Celtics being up 2-0 right now. Because that second game was not close whatsoever. But I am very interested about, you know, this being more of a Heat issue than a Celtics issue.
So I think the bench by Miami is playing so bad. Like, they are severely underachieving. Like, I mentioned Victor Oladipo being a 0. Like, he is not, like, the 0 he's playing. He's coming back from injury. He's not the guy you saw in Indiana that was averaging 20 points a game, but he is not this guy who's 2-for-11 from the field and playing bad defense, Jaylen Brown blowing by him, anyone on the court, Peyton Pritchard making step-back threes over Oladipo. Like, that's not who he is. He has to play better for Miami to play better in this series, and that's a very obvious statement I just made, but he has to play better. Tyler Hero's been terrible. He can't hit a shot. He was like minus 34.
33.
33 in game two. He got the bag from Miami, and he has been so bad. I really don't get it, and it's not like the Celtics are doing something to him defensively, trapping him, running him off screens. He's just missing wide-open shots, so I think those two are the key. Because right now in your starting lineup, Gabe Vincent's been okay, undrafted player, okay. They do miss Kyle Lowry, and he may play in game three. We'll get to that here soon. But Max Strus has also been terrible. Like, he's missed some wide-open shots.
Max Strus has been awful. I don't know
that's
why.
That's his role.
Sticks after Rich Keefe on that one, who called that guy for what he was. That guy is awful. And you're definitely right. I'm looking at what Tyler Hero has done. I mean, just throughout
one
the playoff.
One of 8 from 3?
He'll have a 25-point game, you know, then he'll have 18 off the bench, and 14, 11, 10, 10. And then the first two games against the Celtics, 18, 11. It doesn't feel like it's enough to get the Miami Heat over the hump. And, yeah, it's weird to say, but the Boston Celtics have, like, a sturdy little bench. You know, they were doing a 7-man rotation practically during game one. And, yeah, you've seen Peyton Pritchard perform.
Yep.
You've seen, Christ, if Aaron Nesmith could hit a quarter of his shots, can you hit a quarter of your shots, Aaron? You'd be in this rotation because Aaron Nesmith actually defends at a fairly
the
high level.
Yeah. So I have a question, and it kind of goes back to for the last series as well and into this series. So you saw the Celtics versus the Bucks without Chris Middleton, and now you're getting the Heat without Kyle Lowry. Is Kyle Lowry the same kind of – would have the same kind of impact that Chris Middleton would have had in that second series? Like, because to me, when I watch this, I don't know that Kyle Lowry really would have made a difference in game two. Like, game two was just such a bad beatdown that I don't know that he would have made a difference. But at least in game one, I feel like he probably would have made it – even look like Miami deserved to win that game even more.
Now, I would say Kyle Lowry is kind of like the Marcus Smart of their team. Like, he's not anywhere near the defender. Like, he's still fat and he's still slow, and now he's older too. So Kyle Lowry is kind of like a Marcus Smart in terms of, like, when things are going really bad for Miami. Like, we have these insane Celtics runs where Tatum, Brown, Horford, they're all hitting these corner threes. Grant Williams hitting threes. It's a 12-0 Celtics run. He calms things down for them, initiates the offense, can draw a cheap foul. He can also muck the game up here in Game 3. If he plays in Game 3, gets Marcus Smart into two quick fouls, changes the game, takes a guy out of the lineup, that's what he does. He's not the guy we saw in Toronto in the bubble, what, 2 or 3 years ago, where he was a pest.
Like, he was a driving force.
He was so
good.
He could draw a flagrant foul whenever he wanted. He was able to get Marcus Smart very frustrated. He got them kind of off their game. So he's not the player he used to be, but I do think they're vastly missing him. Bam Adebayo has been the real problem with him.
Thank you. That's
massive.
The guy.
He's the number one problem
massive
with the Heat right now.
That's Chris Middleton for this team.
He's on the floor, but he's invisible.
Look,
I don't think it's the Celtics doing it to him.
No,
I think he's been
he's
playing
just bad.
Stupid.
No, I think Bam Adebayo is such a quality 20-22 big man. I really like him. I've always liked him. And to see how just atrocious he's played in the last two games. I keep waiting. This is going to be it.
Yep.
This is going to be his quarter. This is when he's going to put his stamp on this series, and you're going to go, oh, wow, now it's up to Ime Udoka and the Celtics to make an adjustment because he can wreck games like that. At least historically he has, but for whatever reason, I don't know if they're just not finding reasons for him to get in the offense. I don't know if they're trying to match what the Celtics are doing with their three-pointers, but he's been an afterthought for two games now, and I don't understand why.
Because my thought process is I watch it, and it looks like he's not, like, the game plan has nothing to do with him.
That's what I'm saying,
It's just they're completely ignoring him, and I don't know if it's they're being scared off by Grant Williams and Al Horford after watching what they did with Giannis in the last series.
Be.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, those guys are great defensively, but because the last time these two teams met in the playoffs, the bubble, right?
Correct.
And Bam Adebayo dominated the Celtics. Granted, it was Daniel Tice on the floor and not Al Horford, Grant Williams. But I feel like he should be far more involved in the Miami Heat offense than he is.
He should be. Whether it's simple stuff like hook shots in the paint where he establishes position, takes one dribble and right over his right shoulder or left shoulder, easy hook shots, he's not trying those. He's not doing
there's no pick and roll. Like, there's
no
nothing.
Pick and pop for three. He can shoot the three from the corner. Like, you mentioned in the bubble, he was locking the rim down. Everyone remembers him blocking Tatum at the rim. and winning them a game and winning them the series eventually, he's just not doing that at all. Like, I don't know if it's he's afraid of Robert Williams and the shot blocking effect that he has, but
ridiculous.
He's bigger than Rob.
He's the biggest guy on the floor
on these guys. Yeah. Like, yes, Al Horford, Rob Williams, Greg Williams, they all play defense at a very competent level, but Bam Adebayo is like a different kind of center. You know, I really, if he isn't injured, there's a good chance he's your defensive player of the year.
Sure.
He's still got a lot of votes, but he missed a bunch of time this year. I think he's a quality player. I think the Heat got a really good dude with that guy, but I just don't understand it. It's almost like, you know, their game plan is we got to match the firepower. We got to knock down as many threes as the Celtics are knocking down. And he just doesn't seem to fit into what they're trying to do. And I think if you're Eric Spoelstra, that's the adjustment that you got to make is, you know, Jimmy Butler's going to get what Jimmy Butler wants to get. But Bam Adebayo can absolutely be a part of that. And Bam Adebayo can absolutely be a part of their game plan and maybe make this an interesting series. I mean, just to jump ahead a little bit, we all think this is done, right? There's not a chance that the Heat are going to come back and win this thing.
I would say if Miami steals tonight, I would be inclined to get back into seriously believing this is a series. I think it all comes down to tonight. I think it all comes down to Kyle Lowry. I think if Kyle Lowry plays, there's a decent chance they're competitive in this game. But if he doesn't play, and you're
well, according to the injury report I see on ESPN, he is out tonight.
He is out. Yes.
That is
what I am reading right this second. It says status out.
Now, that might be new because I saw yesterday he was questionable. So that was an upgrade from out. So that might be a little bit old from ESPN, who does get things wrong every once in a while. But
no.
If he is questionable and he does play tonight, I think that I would probably go Heat plus 6.5. Which I think is the line for tonight's game. That's a lot of points.
So
that's like a three-possession game.
As of 14 hours ago, per the Miami Heat themselves, blue check mark, Kyle Lowry, hamstring, listed as questionable to play in Game 3, along with P.J. Tucker, Max Strus, and Gabe Vincent.
So Strus and Vincent have been playing with the hamstrings. They probably will play. P.J. left with, what, the knee injury?
And then he came back.
And got the MRI, sprained his ankle in Game 1.
Oh, he's such a warrior. What does that mean, Coach Spo, to see this fossil come back and muck it up with the youngsters again? Okay, great.
So I think if you had P.J. Tucker playing, you have Kyle Lowry playing, you get improved play from Bam Adebayo, you get improved play from Tyler Hero. That is the script for the Miami Heat to win Game 3. I'd probably pick the Boston Celtics to win. But I think I kind of think that they're getting a lot of disrespect right now. Like, the Heat haven't won a title yet, but they're also a damn good team who've been around for 3-4 years now. Like, a lot of continuity here.
I just think top to bottom, though, this Celtics team is just better, right? I think.
Sure.
It's hard for me to see the Celtics not winning both games at home, probably losing Miami, because I think I've noticed with the Celtics team, they're apt to lay a quick stinker, but then it's almost worth it for Ime because then he immediately gets them to rebound because they've lost 11 games since January 1st. They are 10-1 in those games, and that one loss, they were without four of their starters. So, I mean, this team is unbelievable after a loss. So it's like they'll win two or three in a row. They'll lose a stinker, which is like, what are you doing? It's like that Game 5 in Milwaukee. Like, I don't understand how you're losing that game. Or even Game 1 against the Heat. And then all of a sudden they come out and are lights out for two or three games again. And I think that's just kind of their process.
The NBA does not generally favor the plucky, scrappy heart teams. You know, it's yes, they always make for a good story. Yes, they always make for entertaining basketball. But it inevitably comes down to, is your team more talented than the team across from you? That's how it historically has been.
And the Celtics are the
most
talented.
There's so many examples of, like, great teams that are, you know, have some talent, but they can't ever get over the top, which is why I think, to your point, Tyler, that the Miami Heat are always in the conversation. But, yeah, Jimmy Butler's a great player. Yeah, Bam Adebayo's a great player. But that core group together might not be enough to really get them, you know, say the unthinkable happens and they end up beating the Celtics. I don't see that team beating Dallas.
No
or
chance.
Beating Golden State. So, yeah, I look, I sound really full of myself considering how much crap I talked about the Celtics in the first couple months of the season. I don't see them losing another game in this series. I think we're done in five and then, you know, bring me Golden State.
617-779-7937. This is the WEI Producer Show, and we ask you, is this series over, or am I kind of the wrong person here to give too much credit to the Miami Heat and say that they're getting disrespected right now. And I'm a little bit worried about Game 3, especially with the return of potentially Kyle Lowry. Let's get to a break here on the WEI Producers Show. And coming up next, I want to ask the question, you can answer this on the phone lines. How much credit does Danny Ainge deserve for this run? Gary Washburn told us on Maloney 48 Mego yesterday, he deserves a lot of it. I completely disagree. And also another topic was thrown out by Mego yesterday on the show. How does this team that hasn't won anything just yet, but how do they already compare to the 2008 team that won a ring? That's next on the Producer Show.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
WEEI. We are right back to the WEEI Producers Show.
Streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
How much do you think Miami misses the kind of toughness of Kyle Lowry, because his name really hasn't came up since they've been winning games?
Yep, I feel like if Kyle Lowry doesn't play, this series is over. It's not even a conversation, because to me, he's your floor general, right?
He can match Marcus Smart to a degree.
He can match, yeah, from a playmaking standpoint, yes. And also being able to control the game. You know, in the playoffs, it's very important to have a guy that control the pace, control the momentum, control the game, and get guys their shots comfortably. And right now, they don't have that floor general. It's going to be difficult for them to beat the Celtics.
That is Amari Stoudemire, former Nets assistant head coach. And he actually resigned to pursue more like religious opportunities. It was interfering with his job. He coached with Ime Udoka on the Nets staff last year. So he knows the game, still around the game. Great player. Definitely committed to the game in terms of being a coach, but just his religious stuff got in the way. But he mentioned there, if no Kyle Lowry, this series is over. Like, the Heat just do not have the personnel. It's kind of what we've been talking about the last 15 minutes. Like, they're outmatched. They really have to have probably the refs in their favor and have all of their guys playing well in order to beat the Celtics team. So I ask you guys, like, how much credit does Danny Ainge deserve for this Celtics playoff run? Because we asked Gary Washburn yesterday, and he said a lot of credit, and I'm not really sure why, because what have the Celtics actually won so far? I mean, they're going to probably beat the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals, but would you guys give Danny Ainge credit for this Celtics playoff run so far?
I mean, he deserves some of the credit, right? He built a lot of the foundation of this team through the draft and I mean, he's done a very good job. He was the one that got you Tatum. He's the one that got you Brown. He's the one that really kind of started what is now evolving into a possible championship team and what we all hope is the beginning of a dynasty.
You know, I can actually see both sides of this. Oh, I understand. If you want to just talk specifically about this playoff run and how it's all come together, I think it's point Ime. Than anybody else.
Oh, 100% agree.
You know,
with
yes,
that.
The players got to play and the players got to execute.
But if you're breaking it down like credit pie, how much percentage does Danny Ainge get?
I'm going to say, you know what? No, I'm going to give him credit. He gets a nice. He should get a nice slice of the credit pie, which is a nice, refreshing. It's not as bland as the blame pie that we're normally serving
yeah, exactly.
up here
with sweeter
on
taste.
A day in day out basis. No, let's credit pie sounds
more like
delicious.
A key lime. It's delicious.
Whipped cream on top.
Yep.
Yes, I give Danny Ainge credit for not drafting Markelle Fultz, for trading the number one pick, for getting Jaylen Brown, for drafting Marcus Smart, for drafting Rob Williams. He should have some credit for the team. For the playoff run, though,
it's all Ime.
It's Ime, and it's Brad Stevens, by the way, who Danny Ainge was also partially responsible for hiring, but if you want to go executives, if you want to go the top brass, it's Ime and it's Brad Stevens first. I think there is a major, major buy-in factor with what Ime Udoka is saying, what he's preaching and what he's coaching that did not exist when I wanted to sink this ship back in December. It was not there. And the thing that kept coming back time and time again was how much fun they were having. And why were they having all that fun? Is because they figured out that they could play at a high level and defend at an even higher level and win those games. And they realized, oh, this is what we got to do? Okay, coach, okay, Brad, we can do this. We're going to go out there and we're going to choke out every single team that we come across and probably have a good chance to play for a championship. But I will still credit Danny Ainge as being the architect and getting all these pieces in the first place. For the first time in a long time in the Boston Celtics, this is a homegrown team.
Yeah.
And I know we're going to get into it a little later on in the segment as far as the 08 versus this current team. That's what's so different is outside of, like, yes, Al Horford, who kind of feels like one of our own now anyways, this team was primarily built by Danny Ainge.
He drafted four of your five starters and Grant Williams. Like, that's a massive building block of this team, right? Everybody but Al Horford on your starting lineup was drafted by Danny Ainge.
That's it. And then Derek White was a Brad Stevens trade.
And they're both free agent pickups anyways.
And you could say Brad Stevens brought Al Horford back. But, so I'm going to give Danny Ainge a good amount of credit. But, Tyler, you're not going to give him any credit.
I give Danny zero because Danny wouldn't have got this team this far. He would have never traded a first-round pick to get Derek White, which was a little bit of a controversial move. Your sixth or seventh guy you're giving up a first-round pick to get. Danny probably would have gotten fired if he came back this year and this team underachieved once again. He would have gotten pushed out. I think he wouldn't have pulled.
I mean, he got pushed out in the first place.
Essentially, he basically got chosen. He personally decided to leave to go back to Utah. It was a soft landing for him. I don't think that this team gets here if Danny Ainge is still the leader of the team. He traded away, Brad Stevens traded away Romeo Langford, who was Danny's guy. Romeo Langford stunk, and I love Romeo Langford. You guys know that.
Well documented.
NBA cryptid.
He traded away Dennis Schroeder for essentially nothing, got back Daniel Tice, which I don't know if Danny does that as well because it was an offseason signing by Brad. But also, like, Danny would be a guy who would trade him for, like, a traded player exception, like literally an asset you couldn't use on the court. Like,
so I don't disagree that they wouldn't. If he was still the GM, that they may not necessarily be in the same position.
Sure.
But at the same time, like, you have to look at what he did draft. Like, looking from specifically the draft, he drafted four of your five starters and the next guy off the bench. Like, I think he deserves, even if it's a small piece, like, he deserves some of that credit.
I would probably give Ime credit, number one,
yeah,
Brad Stevens,
like,
two.
It's probably, like, 60% Ime, 30% Brad, and a 10% Danny Ainge.
But would you agree with me that if Danny's running this club, like, they're out of the playoffs now and they're not there?
If Danny Ainge is, this is what would happen.
Is Ime still the coach?
No, Ime would still be the coach, but if Danny Ainge was still your general manager, your president of basketball operations, whatever his title was, if Danny Ainge is still here, Dennis Schroeder 100% is not only still here, but he is trying to sign Dennis Schroeder to a long-term contract. I think you're still trying to take that square peg and fit it into the round hole.
Just not trust Marcus Smart to be Marcus Smart?
And that's an Ime thing. And maybe that is a Brad Stevens thing, too. Maybe Brad knew all along that, like, no, this guy is a point guard. This is who he should have been. And it is interesting to see how Marcus has thrived because
he even kind of calls somebody out. And it may be a shot at Danny because he said post-game, he's like, I'm finally able to do what I was drafted to do.
Well, yeah.
He's like,
I'm finally able
to be the point guard that I was brought in to be.
And he was never going to be that guy with Kemba here, with Kyrie Irving,
exactly,
with Isaiah Thomas. I think his rookie year, he did play with Rajon Rondo, who was basically, you know, a very similar version of what Marcus Smart has turned into now. So, yeah, if Danny Ainge is here, there's a good chance that, you know, maybe they do something at the trade deadline, but it's really, I think, the biggest thing that they did. I know Derek White gets a lot of play for being brought over here, but I really think it's bringing Al Horford back in the offseason has paid such huge dividends for this team on the court and bigger off the court. Because I remember when he was gone, Rob Williams specifically talked about how big a mentor he was and how important he was in his development. Brad Stevens basically said the same thing as well. And you got Ime Udoka calling Grant Williams mini Al. I mean, I really feel that and on top of all that, the now we're hearing more about the calming presence of Al Horford and not so much with Marcus Smart, but the calming presence of Al Horford. There's so many sort of intangibles that factor into how this team is played when it comes to Al Horford. And I'm not sure Danny Ainge makes those moves. Brad Stevens, however, has a better idea of what makes this team tick. And even though they know they're not listening to his voice as strongly as they're listening to Ime's now, Brad Stevens, I think, is really... Now I'm talking myself into it. I feel like Brad Stevens should probably get more credit with this team, this specific playoff run. Danny Ainge is probably more responsible for what this team was looking like at the beginning of the year, but I will still give him a little credit based on the guys that he brought in.
Let's say good morning to Kelly in Amherst. What's up, Kelly?
What's up, guys? I'm loving the conversation. I'm literally, like, I'm hot right now. My face is, like, hot.
What are you hot about?
I'm, like, so upset.
Tell me.
By the things you guys are saying. The 0% Danny Ainge.
Yep.
That has got to be the hot take of the millennium. That is amazing. The guy who drafted every one of these players. And Ingram said, now, one thing I will say is this, and I'll leave it alone. If you ran back the exact same team that got smoked by Miami 2 years ago in the bubble, wouldn't that pretty much still be enough to destroy Miami right now? I mean, look at that game yesterday. Al Horford wasn't huge, or whatever. Yeah, that was 2 days ago. Al Horford was not huge. Derek White wasn't even there. And I'm not sure Tice saw the floor. So those were all the NBA guys that absolutely destroyed the Miami Heat. The NBA is not the NFL. You know, like LeBron was an anomaly. You don't normally come into the NBA and look really great in your first couple of years. We all knew it would take a couple of years for these guys to develop. Tatum is looking like a Dragon Ball Z fighter or something. He has evolved. That's why the Celtics are so good.
So, Kelly,
Danny Ainge, I would give...
Let me throw a hypothetical at you. So let's say the Celtics win this year. They win two out of the next three. You're giving Danny Ainge credit for winning two titles because he drafted Jason Tatum?
Sure. I can't go that quite that far into the future. But if you want to talk about giving Danny Ainge credit for this team,
the question I'm trying to get at is why does Danny Ainge deserve eternal credit for drafting two of the franchise cornerstones?
Because he made the right picks.
Sure. So,
but he failed in other aspects and would have gotten fired.
Well, let's not forget that with that Tatum pick, two other professional GMs thought that Ball and Fultz were better. He traded out of that number one to get the number three and to get more. So, I mean, like, Danny Ainge was the greatest of all time. Now, what everyone is mentioning is this, the move that he would not have made. I'm not going to say Danny Ainge is perfect. He clearly had an issue with wanting to get the best out of every trade, and he was looking for talent versus pieces that fit. I will give that up, but I think, to talk to hypotheticals, if you left every single thing alone, I think they still would have, you know, I think they still would have looked great. The turnaround wasn't because of that trade, right? It wasn't after the trade deadline that they turned around. They were looking great before that. And Derek White actually stunk for at the beginning, and people were saying they shouldn't even have got him. So, no, it's Tatum, it's Rob Williams, two PG. They have the number one and number two defensive player of the year candidates. They have a possible MVP. He was number six in MVP this year. He'll probably be higher than that next year. You know, they're locked. But the guy who said it might have been Tyler, who said that if they lose game three, this is definitely a series. I totally agree, man. I totally agree. If you look at Miami in that first game, I think you might see that Miami come out again. For some reason, in that first game, they were just able to rip the ball out of people's hands. I don't know what it is. In the regular season, if you try to, you know, stick your hands in the cookie jar, they will call you for that foul, even if you don't get the guy's hand.
Good call there, Kelly. Are you agreeing with him on that?
No, I don't see them. I don't see the Celtics losing game three.
Me either.
No, I don't see
but
that.
But the either. Hypothetical is if they lose game three, it's once again a series.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, of course it's a series.
It's four
They're
games
down
left.
Two games to one at that point.
Correct.
Like, it's kind of, it's self-explanatory.
No,
I don't think the Celtics lose game three. I don't think they lose at home.
I don't really feel like either team is in a position to you know, screw off with any of these games. Like, oh, yeah, game one is you can't say game one is a must win. Watch me. All these playoff games are must win. I don't care. You don't want to be in a position where you're trying to chase a team. Yes, I don't think that Miami is as talented as the Boston Celtics, but that doesn't mean I want to see them end up behind them. The Danny Ainge thing is ridiculous because the thing that I heard so much about with the Boston Bruins when they won their championship is like Jeff Gordon should get more credit. Okay, Jeff Gordon drafted, like, he drafted Brad Marchand. He brought in Tuukka Rask.
Cornerstones.
He brought, Lucic. He drafted Lucic. He was here for, I think it was just the 06 draft. But his name still gets brought up. And that's not necessarily because of the great job that he did. It's just, I think it's more because of not a lot of people liked Peter Chiarelli and what he did when he was here, even though he was also partly responsible for a team that ended up winning a Stanley Cup and contended for one more. And it's kind of feeling like the same thing with Danny Ainge. I do think that he should have some credit when it comes to what this team has become. But I think you put it very well, Tyler. If the Boston Celtics go on to win a championship, if they go on to win two, if this is like dynasty mode, which I'm not there yet, does Danny Ainge become a guy that gets brought up when we're talking about Brad Stevens and Ime Udoka? I think he should. I think he should,
but he does not deserve as much credit.
He deserves a mention, but I don't
think... It's Brad's team.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is Brad's... It's Brad and Ime's team. 100% agree. I'm just saying I think Danny at least deserves a mention for having drafted six of your seven best players.
But he also... I guarantee if they could have got it done, they would have signed Dennis Schroeder to a four-year, $100 million deal. And that actually ended up being the move that was the right move to make. And let Marcus Smart turn into the player that I always believed that he could be.
And how about Brad Stevens? His very first move was to trade Kemba Walker, a guy who Danny Ainge gave a massive contract
to. Who was also on that
to.
2020 team that Kelly and Amherst thinks would have whooped on.
No.
On the,
Kemba
the,
Walker the, was a defensive sieve who was attacked like Tyler Hero or Duncan Robinson is in this series every single possession in the bubble. The Miami Heat went at him. The Toronto Raptors went at him because he sucked, and that was a Danny Ainge move. And Danny Ainge, a guy who gave him $100 million, $100-plus million with two bad knees, he's not going to give up on him that quickly.
He had a blind
spot. Brad Stevens' very first move was to trade him for Al Horford, which I have to admit, I did not like that move because I saw Al Horford coming back at $26 million. I'm like, yikes, that's not good.
Rejuvenated Al.
Let's quickly squeeze in this topic here because I loved it yesterday on the Maloney, Foree, and Mego show. Mego started comparing, and we'll ask you guys this question at 617-779-7937. Is it too soon to compare the 08 title team to this 2022 Celtics? I say no, only because the question is about like the ceiling. Does this team have the potential to be better? It's kind of a weird sports radio type of argument. Could this team be better than a team that won a ring? I think if you played them on like a streetball court 5v5, I think this 22 Celtics team is actually probably better than 08. I don't think it's crazy to throw out there. What do you guys think?
I think it's interesting. I think they're very different in how they approach it, first of all, because this team is just all about hitting threes. Like when they hit threes, they're not losing a basketball game because their defense is just so good. I think defensively, both teams are probably about equal. I think their strengths are just in different areas, right?
They're both number one in the league in defense.
Yeah, and Kevin Garnett was just an absolute monster inside the paint and everything like that. But this team is so good at perimeter defense, on top of just being pretty good in the paint with Robert Williams there. But so it's weird because I think in the areas that 08 excels, this team not necessarily does, but it's kind of vice versa. The areas that this team excels, 08 didn't. I think it ultimately would have come down to, I just think Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett are those dudes, and Ray Allen are those dudes. So it's going to come down to 5 seconds on the clock. They have the final shot. They're not going to miss.
Ryan, what do you think?
I love that 08 team. And when you look at like the whole 5 versus 5 aspect of it, I think I would give it to the 2008 team just because I don't think there's one person on your 2022 Celtics that is going to be able to check Kendrick Perkins and Kevin Garnett. Yeah, I would love to see Grant Williams try to guard Kendrick Perkins. Kendrick Perkins was not known for his offensive prowess, but you're not going to stop him if there's a smaller man in front of him.
Oh, Perk, come on. He was an offensive. He's on offense.
Absolutely.
That's not what you're pointing to is the reason they're better.
No, I would say that.
To Grant's credit, right, I think the matchup between him and Garnett would be a lot of fun just because I think it's very similar to what he just did on Giannis, right? I think Garnett would have been able to be aggressive in that same manner, but at the same time, Grant played really... I understand Giannis had, 30-plus points in, every single game, but that's only because he was taking, 50 shots and driving to the basket on every opportunity.
No, I like to look at... I mean, obviously, it's so easy to point out the differences of, how both teams were assembled, all the old heads, as Gary Washburn from the Boston Globe told us yesterday when we talked to him at 4:30. I actually look at more of like the similarities where both teams, that 08 team started hot, but when you look at where all those guys had been in their careers, they all lost at a relatively high level. Like the Celtics, the Timberwolves, the Milwaukee Bucks, where Ray Allen played, all those teams went fairly deep at one point or another in the playoffs and either ran into the Spurs or Kobe and Shaq's Lakers or Allen Iverson and the 76ers or LeBron's Cavs, and they never got over the top. And there is sort of a similarity when you look at the Celtics team where they were always competitive. I don't know if that's the right word, but they were always, we made 3 out of 4 conference finals, and that's not nothing. So when you look at both teams, they almost had that early kind of adversity in their career. The only difference was the 08 Celtics got together and said, collectively, we are good enough, so we're going to try it this way. Whereas, and so there was no, they didn't have to grow together because they were already grown. The jobs were established. They knew what they had to do, as opposed to this 2022 team that has spent the last 5 years figuring it out and growing up together, getting bigger, getting more mature. I would still give it to the 08 team, but the 2022 team is not that far off. You know, win a championship, then the discussion becomes really interesting.
It tells you how close this 2022 team is to being elite. We're throwing them in the category of an 08 team, who some people believe is like a top 10 NBA team all time, like a great team that went through Kobe, went through LeBron, like a great team.
The Pistons team that they went through was legitimate. Sure. That Hawks team took them to 7.
Al Horford's Hawks.
That was,
which is wild to think about. That
Hawks team had talent. That Pistons team was good. And yeah, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant are there to greet you. That 08 team had a legitimate slog through the playoffs, but they were that good. They were, I think, a 60. It was like the biggest turnaround in NBA history from one season to the next.
The Ken and Curtis Show is on standby. They're up here in 15 minutes from the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studios at 9 o'clock. They are up next. But coming up here in our next segment, I want to talk about some concern that is actually coming from not just media or talking heads or callers, Danny and Quincy. This is actually Patriots players who are concerned about what they are seeing. It's May 21st. Shocker. It's May freaking 21st, and we have real issues coming out of Foxborough. That is next on the WEEI Producer Show.
Now, we're right back to it. The WEEI Producers Show on WEEI.
And streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
I don't want to make a huge deal out of this yet, because let's keep in mind, this is a completely new regime on the offensive side of the ball. They could be doing things a different way, and there could be a lot of people who aren't used to the new way things are going to be done, and maybe they might be better. I'm allowing for that. But so far, I mean, I have countless people who have either been with the Patriots or are hearing from players on the team who they are alarmed to this point, and they've barely done anything so far, Trenny. And so They are really worried about the direction of the offense, where this is going, especially off of what a lot of people heard. A lot of people around the NFL listened to what Joe Judge said the other day, and almost all of them were like, what? What is he talking about? And so there is a high level of concern about what's going on with the Patriots.
This is the WEI Producer Show. Ryan Garvin, Chris Scheim, I'm Tyler Devitt. That was the voice of Greg Bedard, who
Scheim was right.
Reporting Scheim on May right. 20th, the Patriots players are concerned by what they're seeing from the Patriots offensive coaching staff. Christian Fourier was saying it yesterday. He thinks this is going to be a cluster F.
Of course it is. Absolutely is. This is what I don't understand. And this is not a slight on Mac Jones. I don't understand how anyone can get better because of these offensive coordinators.
Yeah.
Like, it has nothing to do with the players. It is all about the coaches. These guys are buffoons. And the fact that Bill Belichick hired them to be offensive coaches is beyond me. I don't understand it.
It's almost like he's trying to flex his I'm smarter than you muscle. Like, you don't think Joe Judge can coach? I mean, he thought he was bad with Daniel Jones. Like, watch what we can do with Mac Jones. Matt Patricia going back to his roots. Oh, his offensive line roots. It's like, no. Actually have guys who can play to their strengths and with experience.
Get an offensive coordinator.
Yes.
It's not that hard.
A real one.
There's a million of them. You can find them anywhere. And if you really want to be able to run your system, you find some Joe Schmo.
Which I don't even know what the system is.
Yeah. You find some no-name Joe Schmo who's from a Nick Saban tree or some other coach that you like, and you just go grab him, you yank him into the NFL, and you say, hey, this is what we're going to do. You're going to do this.
When have they ever done that?
Never.
Never.
But it's better than bringing in Joe Judge, who sucks at his job.
He's such a boob.
He is so bad. It boggles my mind how you bring in a guy who was the head coach of an offense who was the worst in the NFL for 2 years, and they couldn't score a touchdown in the entire month of December, and you say, That's my offensive coordinator.
But it should only boggle your mind if you thought the Patriots are going to take this giant leap forward. I think the last time that we were all together, we were talking about how this is a pause year. Like, this is actually...
Yeah, but you should be wanting to improve, right? So, like, at the very worst case,
improve
Nick Haley...
what, though?
You should be improving for 2023. You need to be making steps forward instead of making steps back.
If you're not getting better, you're getting worse.
So if you're right, like, you shouldn't be shocked, then why not just promote Nick Caley? Like, at least he is young and has some opportunity to grow. I understand he also has never called plays, but he's also a clean slate. Like, there's a lot of room to grow there. Joe Judge has already been a head coach now in the NFL. He is what he is. He sounds, when he talks in his press conferences, like he's still a head coach. And by the way, Joe, you're not. You're not even technically the offensive coordinator. So it makes no sense to me at all how any of this works.
Listen, I think if you're a Patriots fan, just take all of this in stride. Just let it go now that your team is probably, if they're fortunate, going to win 7 games. That's if they are good. And you know what? I think, you know, for all the junk you've said about Mac Jones, I think this might actually be the perfect guy. Because I think that Bill Belichick thinks the kid is idiot-proof and that Joe Judge and Matt Patricia cannot possibly foul this up. Now, the other 51 players on your active roster might have an issue with who is sending a message and how are we figuring this out, and I don't know who I should be talking to, and everybody's coaching everything, so I don't really know who I'm supposed to answer to, so we're getting a lot of communication errors and just basic logistical crap that any football team would be able to figure out. That might have the effect there, but as far as your quarterback goes, I think that, you know, I think he'll be fine. He should be fine.
Can we address these text messages?
Sure.
From the 508.
I was drunk.
It's all about the coaches. So if Pat Mahomes was on the Patriots, he'd fail with these coaches. If Josh Allen was on the Patriots with these coaches, he'd fail too, right? You boob. Mac Jones is not Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes.
Not yet.
Mac Jones has not led the league in passing yards or passing touchdowns, or won a Super Bowl, or won an MVP, or even gotten MVP votes.
Yes, like those guys cover up bad coaching more so than Mac Jones can. We are not saying Mac Jones will fail. We are saying it's more likely he will fail because of the people around him.
I'm not even saying Mac Jones will fail. I think it's very likely Mac Jones has exactly the same season he had last year, which with these coaches is probably a win for you. Because ultimately, I think the Patriots as a unit will fail because of these two buffoon coaches that you have on offense.
It makes sense. I mean, Fourier's seen it, been around on very bad coaching staffs. He trashes Joe Gibbs at any point by saying he's the worst coach he's ever been around. And he recognizes, and he's not even in the building right now, Fourier recognizes that this is not going to work.
Anybody that has sat and listened to the 2 days of press availability that all the Patriots coaching staff did will know that this is not the norm. And not even by, like, Patriots standards of, oh, this is how we do stuff, we're different. You ask any other team in football, who's your offensive coordinator? Who's your defensive coordinator? What is your role? Are you doing special teams? And you're not going to get these glib, cute responses from people. It's a madhouse. But I'm telling you guys, take it in stride. It's going to be a long season. And if you win 7 games, I think it'll be great. But hey, you know, maybe your quarterback will actually develop into something.
And to you out there who believe that from the 7-8-1, play gets called, one player tells the other players, and the play is run by the players. Yeah. You have to get a play called, and it has to be a good play, and it has to be in rhythm. Like, there's an art to being an offensive coordinator. I cannot these people who think that I could step in and be the Bill Belichick's offensive coordinator because I just follow a sheet and call a play. You clearly have never been on a football field. You have no idea what's going on, and it infuriates me. I need to get out of here.
It's a maddening situation, but let's actually be a little bit positive here, because your Celtics, very good chance you win tonight.
They're going to be up 2-1 after.
Are you taking Heat plus 6.5?
No,
I'm not
going to touch
that.
You're
an over guy.
Yeah, this is 100% over 207.5. Both games have already hit the over. The defense we're getting is more turnover, quick point scored base than it is shutting down the other team.
No, we're blowing doors again. We're 2-for-2. I nailed it.
Blowing doors.
Nailed it game 2.
So you're taking Celtics minus 6?
Absolutely.
Minus 26. That is Chris Scheim, Ryan Garvin. I'm Tyler Devitt. The producer's show is produced, as always, by Nicola Pan. The Canada and Curtis Show is up next, and they are live from the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studios. We appreciate you joining us. If you're just now joining us, hit the rewind button on the Odyssey app or find us on WEI.com or wherever podcasts are found. This has been the Producer Show. We are back next week at 8 to 9 a.m. John Anderson is still, I think, off. He's doing some wedding stuff.
Probably,
so he's off for a while, which the audience, I'm sure, is actually enjoying. So this has been the Producer Show. The Ken and Curtis Show is next from the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studios.
See ya!
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.